Good evening, everyone. It is Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and this is the ABD Guidebook by E.J. Gold, and we're working our way through it with lightning speed for slow readers, and we are slow readers. But before we begin the official part of the class, I think George had something that he'd like to say.
Yes, please, George.
Well, I just wanted to express my very deep gratitude and fond affection for the two of you guides leading us tonight. I'm so grateful that you provide all of us an opportunity to study this material.
It's likewise and mutual simpatico a tutan bien, mi amigo.
We're glad you're there, too. And, you know, I was walking up the so we had dinner
pathway.
Together, and we were walking up the pathway to come to class, and Dan was with walking along with me. We didn't say anything. He was shining his light, helping me
find your way.
He was just, you know, like both he and I were hoping, beyond hope, that I wouldn't fall for some reason, and I didn't. But I was also reflecting the fact that, I don't know, 99% of the times we've done this class in the last couple, 3 years, Dan has been here.
Yes.
And has manned a particular post, and I think he does the same thing maybe on Thursday nights, too. And 120% of the time, Marvette is here.
Yay!
And we have unremitting support from one of the great readers of our little society here of misfits, which is Molly Midway. And she loves to read books, and she's a great reader for all of us. And so bottom line is that it takes a number of individuals, and the consistency that Silverdale gives, it's a little like knowing that someone is going to be there, and it's very rare that he is not able to make it, but it helps in the expression of the very thoughts that we have in our private meditations, mm-hmm. and then now we can speak them out loud. It's like mm-hmm. it's like the holy confessional, that now we can say something because these individuals are here to happily accept.
There's a word that is prominent in some of our activities, and that's called forum. And, you know, forum has a lot of different associations and meanings and classifications. And in this case, when we come to this text, it's as if there is a universal forum, because in every single instance, not a single one of us will escape from experiencing firsthand what this book is about. And
right.
everything around us, either previous to now or after us, will also be in the same situation. So it's a linkage that provides for this particular forum to continue to unfold. I just wanted to say that because our forum is whatever we can bring to it. That's what our forum is in relation to this text mm-hmm. and with each other
nice.
About the text.
So,
and I didn't have that prepared either.
A few weeks ago, Pat used the term give voice to.
Mm-hmm.
And however all this stuff works, I certainly don't know, but I do know that I appreciate the opportunity to give voice to Ulga Ghaffar in this particular case.
Right.
And as he comes forth, and we're talking now about the name of one of the 99 names of God. And years and years ago when EJ wrote this, he took the guidance from Rashad, and he says, oh, you should work with that, and he did. And to me, it's like he's given voice to those particular attributes. And I, you know, let's go ahead and read the first couple of paragraphs.
Yes,
or the
please.
First verses. Do you want to take a shot
yes,
at it?
Yes, yes.
George, I'll have you read the second one if you're available.
Okay.
The other book. Yeah.
The tenth book of the dead, called the Book of Ul-Gafar. One, I am he who unveils that which is noble and veils that which is disgraceful. I veil the sins of man by concealing them with a veil in the outer world and by not punishing them in the world to come.
Two, the first veil placed on man is the interior of man hidden by that which is beautiful. The second veil is the human heart, which has been made the throne of man's disgraceful desires, so that none might know of this veil. The third veil on man is the forgiving of sins that would cause him disgrace among humanity.
Three, these are the veils under which man hides his sins and covers them with grace when he has proven his faith. And as is the case with the books thus far, the first few stanzas or verses are a homage to the particular name of the God in, you know, Ul-Gafar or Al-Gafar, as it's also known as. And we hear some very interesting things here, and I wanted to pause on those, because the next verse, we're going to go into a whole fascinating direction that the author takes us in. But, I mean, I think the first thing, and I sent an email around, and it was just, how many times do we actually hear nobility?
Right.
You know, how much?
It's rare.
It's a rare thing. You know, we might hear it, you know, sometimes, but in this case, we're being urged, in a sense, to say the noble. You know, and this is like this guy comes back, and this particular aspect of the Godhead is its nobility.
Mm-hmm.
And its nobility in its utter purity, in a certain way, of its powerful nobleness.
Its and superiority to every other competing aspect.
Right.
Did you say superiority?
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Because the noble gases,
right,
and the Nobel Prize and the things for which the Nobel Prize honors are those more noble attributes of man, like the Nobel Peace Prize, etc.
Literature, physics, mathematics,
yes.
And not mathematics, but and so on, so medicine. And it's the pinnacle of those areas that are recognized.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like pure nobility. It's like Ul-Gafar comes forth and says, okay, this is nobility.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens?
Then the veils are identified.
Correct.
The three veils. It's astonishing if you think about the use of the word veil. It's almost as if the use of the word is like a verb. It veils and unveils. It both veils that which is shameful or disgraceful, or unveils that which is beautiful. It does both. The veil is not the thing that is covering. It is the action. It veils or unveils. Like clouds.
But I'll hold it over.
Like clouds.
Like clouds.
Yeah.
Molly Midway was sharing with us, like clouds. Veils are like clouds. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, there's another relationship here that occurs in these paragraphs that I think we should bring out.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that's occurring, and then I think, and George, you read it in the second verse, is various veils placed on man. The first veil placed on man is the interior of man, hidden by that which is beautiful. The second veil is the human heart, which has been made the throne of man's disgraceful desires, so that none might know of this. And then the final third veil of the man is the forgiving of sins that would cause him disgrace among humanity. So I thought about that, and I thought, well, this is kind of unusual. Like, here's this nobility, and then here's all these sins, and what's the story there? What's going on? And to me, it's that the pure presence, in a certain way, Ul Gafar is presenting the pure nobility of perfection in a certain way. It's like, here's what it is like. Oh, and whenever I do that, you're going to see all of these, your mm-hmm. own desires and your weaknesses and your blah, blah, blah. But then the killer is, what happens?
Well, you are allowed to have grace. And grace will hide your sin.
And there's this element of forgiveness. So this is not human superiority in terms of better or worse. It's like, here is the ruler, here's the standard of perfection. Here it is. It's just an emanation. And man looks at that and goes, oh, I can't, I'm not even close to that. I'm just a mere sinner. And he goes, I forgive you of that. And then there's this element of forgiveness. And when you read the literature about Al-Ghaffar, it's forgiveness. It's the concept of forgiving. And so we were talking earlier about being in fear when you go through certain things. And my question is this, is like, can we allow ourselves to, yeah, that's who I am. I get afraid. I have this weakness. Yeah, that's who I am. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am forgiven for sake of my nobility, too.
Also, the fact that grace is not something which can be requested. It is not something which can be earned. It is given. And I've always associated the word given and forgiven to be aligned.
So this is my next question. Can you allow yourself to be forgiven for your humanness?
Exactly.
Can you allow yourself? Hard. Very hard to So we have the most noble saying, and I forgive.
Exactly.
And there's this whole other, I mean, these Muslim clerics are just like the Jews in the Torah, when they go into the utter subtlety of words,
mm-hmm.
and they're parsing the concept of forgiveness to, is the concept of forgiving, the act of forgiving, then there's the act of forgiving over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I forgive you. I forgive you. I mean, can you imagine standing there and somebody of that caliber is saying, I forgive you? What would that do to you? You would just explode outward open and you'd be in this holy surrender like, wow. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that you're standing there with this fella and allow me to just do that. No, he's not. That's the whole point.
If we can have the phone in Molly Midway's hands when she's speaking, everyone will hear. Could you repeat what you were just saying?
Do I speak up this way? Okay, yeah, I hear it now.
Yeah.
No, so this character, he sounds like kind of a reassuring character, say that you're forgiven, because in the human realm, people hold grudges and they don't forgive. And
so by definition.
So by definition, he doesn't seem like human. He's not using it as a weapon or anything like that. He's just saying, hey, it's how it works.
Yeah.
That's right. Here's how it works.
Oh.
The mechanism of my nobility.
Oh, okay.
So the other part about this is in the descriptive qualities that are named, the assimilation of the previous 10.
Right.
Actually, the previous 10 with this one makes 11, but we won't get into that, is the kind of thing that you want to start kind of seeing if you can, I don't know, my sense of it is like putting my shoulders back against something that's like real solid and real there. I can't approach it directly. I have to like scootle up to it.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I cannot confront with the big, and here I got this. It's more like I sneak backwards, you know, blatantly. I'm not trying to hide or anything, but I cannot come to it frontways. So if you look at the names and the descriptions, the qualities of the 11 named names of God that we have come to so far, and put yourself at the point of being approached by it.
Yeah.
Like maybe you don't need to do nothing except just open up. Okay, I know you're right here. Okay, it's okay. I'm not going to flip out. It's all right. It's right there. Do you know what I'm saying? That's a practice some traditions talk about, always maintaining the spirit of death on your right behind your left shoulder. Right,
yeah.
There. That's the same kind of thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Where you get the closeness to it, but not exactly right on you, but you just allow yourself to come to it. And then you don't do anything. You just
I've got this.
Yes, please. Go.
You know, I've got this. I'm doing this practical work on self class, and I keep wondering, what's the practice here? And I thought, what's the practice here? Hold nobility in your mind for
20 seconds.
4 or 5 days in a row and see what happens. You know, where is the noble act? We define stuff like this by the myths that we get in television and
yeah.
movies and
yeah,
books.
The cultural context. which may be mistaken.
But what is a noble act when a receptionist who's having a horrible day, you know, her husband yelled at her and the kid's a jerk and they don't have enough money to pay the bills, and she comes to work and she, with grace, welcomes the next customer in.
Correct.
That's a noble act. That means that she's acting from the high nobility, not the lower machine. That's an act of nobility. And so I'm saying is, can we find that nobility in ourselves? Because I think that we're going to need to sniff it out when we get into these Bardo things that we're about to look at in paragraph 4, and we're going to start saying, can I find the nobility even though I'm in fear and panic? Not fear, but fear.
Well, the other part of this as a practice is to open yourself up to the potentiality of something of that which you do not know about.
There you go.
And you can't possibly know about it until you at least open yourself up to the idea of it. And that's the practice you're talking
yes.
about. Can I see the noble act in the higher over the human in a daily activity, a daily response in some fashion?
Yeah.
But then also, is there the possibility to consider that which you cannot know about, but you consider even so? That's what the next part of this requires. We have to hold that.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to, but I'm not imposing it on anybody, but I'm suggesting it as a possible means of movement through.
So let's see where the author takes us now.
Thank you.
And go ahead and read that next.
I've just been waiting for this.
Yeah.
For these are the instructions for the 8th to 14th days of the breaking apart of the 5 primal elements of consciousness into the forms called the guides. 5. And now we shall see the further unraveling of the divine consciousness. And it has come to pass that the stage of the violent guides has come upon you now.
But first of all, I mean, this is the first time where he's saying, here's several days, here's a package.
That's right.
And here's a package of time. And here's what's happening during this period of time. And of course, in the ABD, he doesn't, in the ABD proper.
Yeah, they're not.
He doesn't
they're
do
not
it
lumped.
That way.
They're not lumped.
But we're getting that introduction now. And what does he term it? This is the era of the...
It's the stage.
But of the violent or the...
Yeah, it's the stage of the violent guides.
So the violent, suddenly that's upon us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. It's a notification.
So the next sentence says 6, and in the first, the 7th days, the 5 elements consciousness appeared in the forms of peaceful guides. Now, they will come again, and this time, they will come in the forms of violent guides. I think it's so precise
yeah.
and so clear, and so you cannot miss it. It's not that they are now violent, or yeah. they before were peaceful. It's that the form that they appear in is now violent, and the form that they appeared in before was peaceful. Makes you ponder the suggestion that there are peaceful guides or violent guides. No, it's peaceful appearing or violent appearing. Okay. And the 5, 7, and the 5 primal elements are the same 5 primal elements. And the guides are the same 5 guides. But now the forms should be changed and they shall appear as if violent. I could have just read the paragraph instead of commenting.
So as a voyager, we have to learn not the manifestation, that the manifestation is what's critical, that the form has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And can we stay there in that space, being knowing that these are the violent guides, and say, oh, this is just a different form change? Can we do that? You know, that's the question.
And do you want to have the detail of the next number there, or shall we move to the 10th?
Yeah, go, I jumped to 10.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
You go ahead.
Okay, 10. And on the 10th day, the elements of consciousness shall begin to reform into the forms of the world. And as the primal forms gather and surround you, you shall feel fear. And you shall wish to take refuge. But he who takes refuge from the violent guides, he shall be cast down and he shall be reborn in the lower worlds. Where did we do the thing on backsliding? Was that last week? No.
Mm-mm.
No, that was in Practical Work on Self.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually at chapter 23, Practical Work on Self. He talks about backsliding. Yeah, Christians talk about backsliding, and we're talking about it right now. And that's what, you know, like if you, this whole idea of backsliding at this point, if you do take refuge, it's, then you are reborn in the lower, these lower realms.
That's right. You're taking a form out of the formlessness into something
that is formed.
That has formed.
Hmm, well put.
The paragraph 15 is where I would like to head. And you shall be continually in a state of alertness and fascination. And though you have heard the teaching 1,000 times, it will serve you no purpose here in this stage. And only constant practice in the transcendent state shall pass you through this stage in safety. What do we think that means?
Let's parse that up a bit, okay? So let's break it apart. Go ahead and read it again.
And only constant practice in the transcendent state.
Let me stop you there.
Yes.
So what does that mean?
Yes.
Only practice in the
transcendent state.
What's he talking about?
Well, transcendent means transcended from one thing to another, from one state to another. So it's implied that the transcendent state is not the one you normally use.
So when you're in the transcendent, what I hear is that when you're in the transcendent stage, then you shall perform this practice.
Practice, yes.
Okay. So in other words, there are practices that we need to perform, and maybe that's called a reading that we do or something like that, but it's in that state, then you do a practice. What do you think, George?
What I think is that this transcendent state refers to what E.J. calls 10 years later, the awakened human biological machine. And so that, as he describes, it's a mutually reciprocal initiatory process, so that as the human biological machine awakens, then this transcendent awareness or sensation or perception of one's own essential self comes to the fore and then begins to practice the things that we're reading about in the, you know, in the previous verses.
Some of this material, the secret keeps itself is a term that we hear a lot. And part of the idea is that in this, only when the machine is in the awakened state can you access some of this material, and only then can you then it become, then you're only then able to begin practicing.
Well, and that's right, David, and it's important to, as I'm learning, it's important to be able to awaken the machine in order to allow the essential self, our spirit, to begin to become active, in which case in its activity it begins to spiritualize the materiality of our physical body, and then and begins to spiritualize the materiality of our physical body. And then our material body begins to reflect that transcendent state which we are living with during the course of, you know, every day.
And to add to what Silverdale is saying, verse 16 says, even the most highly disciplined holy men among the changed and priests of metaphysics have come into error during this stage and have become cast down into the world of matter. The implication there, although it is not stated, is they did not practice in the transcendent state.
That's right.
That's the implied thing. Doesn't say it in this particular location. But then skipping down to verse 18, but he who has had even a small amount of practice in the art of death, he shall recognize the angry and violent apparitions as his own, and they shall be to him as the five primal forms of consciousness as they reform into a single conscious entity. Silverdale, what do you do with that one? Verse 18.
Well, look at, again, once we have managed to activate our essential self and thereby awaken our human biological machine, what we begin to perceive is that our essential self is really nothing more than white light and infinite extension, which in its slowed down state happens to become who each of us individually is. And so for a person who has recognized himself, or for a person who has recognized themselves as white light, that's where their center of gravity of the essential self is, which produces an awakened state and then the subsequent spiritualization of the materials. So anyway, I don't mean to be complex, but that's really...
You did exactly what I was hoping you would. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the idea, I think, of nobility.
Yeah.
Is that once we begin to see that we are this white light, which is the droplet of the absolute, that's in there too. and that if we are the white light, then, therefore, this can happen, 18 can happen.
And the art of death, that is the first time the phrase art of death has occurred in this text. It does occur in a few of the other ones, but not very often. The art of dying was the teaching of the spiritual guidance to those dying in the era of the plague in the Middle Ages, Europe, Middle Ages. I have the right time period. Ars Moriendi is what it is called in Latin. You can go online and Google and see that. The drawings and the wood carvings that were used to teach at the bedside and also to receive from the dying's bedside the knowledge that they had from the other dimensions, and they were offering from their death state to those around them. Ars Moriendi is called the art of dying. There's a whole, what would you call it? I use the word repertoire, but that's not quite right. But anyway, you can look at the wood carvings and the drawings from that era. And that's what they are about, the teaching around dying. So, art of dying. Yeah, you got something to say there. No. Somebody else on the...
Okay.
All right.
Good.
Anyway, that's... that verse 18 in chapter 10, or book 10, has, to my way of thinking it, every element of EJ's teaching that ever gets spoken and talked and written about thereafter. Every bit of it is in that verse.
And you know, Pat, if I could just add one more aspect to this verse.
Yeah.
From the book, The Great Adventure, EJ, I to give you the gist of one sentence that made quite an impact on me 20 years ago, and saying it in my own words. So often what we do is we imagine ourselves trying to climb a ladder up into the clear white light of the essential self.
Mm-hmm.
And what EJ points out in the Great Adventure is this is completely wrong. We forget we actually start in the clear white light, and then we descend a ladder into what we consider our ordinary life. And so a verse like this, just if we could just for a moment imagine that we're actually the white light,
right,
and we happen to be experiencing a material life, you know, that's really the trick to this whole game, I think.
I agree with you. That's a good trick. Imagine that we are a drop of pure white light and we are having a material life, but that is not who or what we are.
Yeah, and to me this is this idea of carrying the concept of nobility.
Yeah.
It's not my nobility.
Yeah.
It's nobility in an objective sense.
And, yes, yeah,
you know,
and it's pureness.
And it's pureness. Well, it's a pureness.
Yeah, and one of 99 aspects, nobility, one of 99 aspects.
Yeah. Exactly right. This is just the one that's up right now. And in 20,
yes.
And he that has been in the world of matter, meditating on the forms of the guides, and has become familiar with them, he shall not be overcome by them.
That's good news.
And that's what we were talking a little bit about at dinner. You know, is you just practice meditating on the forms of the guides, because then they will show up there. I think these things, like this and the Tibetan book, they're saying this is an objective occurrence. this is how it works. So you can get ready for it.
Thank goodness, right? I mean, there's an actual, real, true, honest-to-goodness possible way for you to deal with this. In fact, that verse that comes next says, don't even read it, just hear the last sentence. Here, you have heard the key to death. And I'm not reading it because I want everyone to read it for themselves. It will be harder to dismiss if you read it aloud to yourself. In fact, the four of us that have books in our hands right here could all read it aloud to ourselves, and that would do it. In unison, and here we go. 21. And to the microphone, please, Stan. Thank you. And
recognizing
the reality of
spirit,
he
will merge
with them.
And welcome them. Here you have heard the key to death.
Well, and if I could just comment, if we were capable of imagining ourselves as a particle of divinity, white light, and that was our self-centered perception of self, then it would be easy enough to imagine whatever we're witnessing outside of ourselves is really just a projection of our own imagination, in which case we're really nothing more than a movie director, and can we just maintain our self-centered awareness that we're particles of divinity, and this is all just a big show.
Yes.
I think there's a key word in there, and it's called merge. And I think merge can be practiced in one's meditation. And that certainly one would want to recognize oneself as the pure shining void, but if you're not there yet, and you're like doing readings for someone, you can sense that there's a permission that can be given for merging, and hold yourself in that place.
Can you say more about merging?
Well, there used to be a T-shirt about fuzzy boundaries. And that I think that one can operate just in daily life and recognize fuzzy boundaries. And in terms of one keeps oneself isolated with identity, and you put up really stringent boundaries of what is acceptable for you in your environment and how people are to relate to you, and on and on and on. But instead of holding that stringent identity, you start walking through ordinary life with much more fluid options of what can happen from space to space, and therefore merge with what is happening and not be holding on to false identity boundaries.
The way it reads, it says, in recognizing with a capital R,
yes,
reality of spirit, he will merge with the forms of the guides that he has now become familiar with.
Yes.
And he will merge with them and welcome them as his friends, and thus he will be lifted up. Now, what are these particular guides again?
These happen to appear as the violent guides.
Oh, and you're going to be friends with these dudes?
Absolutely. Not just to be friends with them,
but
you will merge with
merge.
Them.
Merge. Is that what you're telling us there?
The phone.
It's all a matter of options and perspective. And maybe equality is given in terms of violent guides, but perhaps if you're not reacting, they're no longer really violent.
Well, we have meditated on the forms of these guides because we see them as forms, not as the attributes necessarily. And once you see them as forms, then it's just a, well, I can merge with that.
Well, one of the statements in that section there has to do with 19, and he shall see reality as it is, and he shall remain with them,
the guides,
as one with them, and there shall be salvation and at one meant. And he shall be lifted up and he shall enter the kingdom forever. I mean, the description is from where Silverdale was telling us of that pureness point of the divinity of white light. And that's the end of 18. And then he shall see reality as it is the start of 19. And then 21 says, and recognizing the reality of spirit. This is a progressive description of what the practice is of being in the awakened state and using the awakened state to observe and recognize and merge with. It is progressive. It's descriptive here. That is a statement. It's a merge with making waking state. Yeah, with the guide. And if the guide is there, it would be where you were. Because it says in this space, that's what's there.
The guide is there.
Yeah, it does describe that.
And by the way, to remind us, you know, first of all, Gurdjieff talking about everything, the all worlds consist are a product of vibrations. And then EJ develops this with his, table of angels, where all these presences of beings are at different frequencies. So I really like what Marvette is talking about, which is, if I understand correctly, as we learn to sense and feel vibrations of varying speeds and rhythms and tempos within ourselves, then we're capable, like in a piano, blending our vibrations or with the world, with the vibrations of the world around us, whether individuals or settings. And the ability to penetrate that world of vibrations begins with our ability to begin to think of ourselves as white light vibrating at the fastest frequency, slowing down to penetrate these other worlds.
And Ul-Ghafar gives us nobility as the standard upon which to look. It's our inner nobility. And look around you and see, do you see nobility? I saw it several times today when we saw the young boy this morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a noble young man.
Exactly. So this is, in a certain way, it's a principle of the awakened state. Another way of describing the 99 names of God. It's a principle of the awakened state that nobleness is one of the qualities.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I want to remind us that if we go back to the beginning, it was said that grace is given.
Grace is
given.
And that we have the option to stand in the position of receiving it, accepting it, surrendering to it, and accepting it, which may not be so habitual in human life.
Not habitual in human life, but in the life, in the life of the white light and the spirit and the nobility that we can be, you naturally move, are able to accept grace because it's, you merge with it then. There's a merger then that you could occur that you can't even see if you're stuck in the human biological machine sleep. You know? So open our eyes to the nobility and then see what happens. But I also want to make sure we jump ahead just a little bit here because we're going to run out of time. And
no, it's okay. Time is not important. Only life.
That's right.
Quote from the current movie of The Last Culture. Mm-hmm. Time not important.
Fifth element.
Thank you.
So let's see here. Maybe we could jump to 33. And everything we've been working on so far, and 33 says, and this, then, is the method for attaining liberation by hearing instruction. And it is the method which leads even the most evil beings in the world of matter into the secret path of the heart. And then 34, and even in those who have indulged in error and sin in the human world may by this instruction be made whole and be born in the kingdom.
And so this method combined with the power of prayer and recognition of truth during the many confrontations with the guides of the transit world, who are in reality simply the five pure elements of consciousness, is effective for the salvation of the unborn consciousness in the transit world.
This material changed the words just a little bit, and you have the writings of the great Christian mystics, too.
Absolutely.
They're just, this is exactly how they talk about receiving grace and being cleansed by grace and entering, and therefore, into the kingdom.
And being washed.
Being washed.
Yes. Having their spirit cleansed, etc.
What are the five
primal elements
of consciousness, George?
I'll tell you exactly what they are. You can look in your book as I tell you what they are. That's one of the things I was researching as we've been going through tonight. But anyway, the first one is space. And by the way, this is to remind us these five elements of consciousness is what allows us to have both our ordinary everyday consciousness, and then if we can undo this, then we have a higher state of consciousness. But anyway, the first one is space. The second one, you know, as humans, we get lost in the concept of being someplace, where as white light, we are no place. The second one is pure form on spaces on page 16. Pure form is on page 18. We begin to identify things as being separate and not altogether unified. Third is on page 20 is feeling and sensation. This kind of, again, this is a feeling and sensation different from the feeling of the essential self. Feeling and sensation here is just emotions and pain when we experience that. On page 23, the fourth primal element is perception. We begin to separate things in the relative distance from one thing to another, ethics or morals. And then the fifth one, primal element, is concept on page 28. So again, we're always thinking in terms of good and bad or light and dark. And of course, none of that exists, except within the creation of our own waking consciousness in order to orient ourselves. But in transformation, all of those things disappear, and we again experience ourselves as white light. We discover our essential self and that it is part of the white light.
Thank you.
The page numbers are
16 for space, 18 for pure form.
But which 20,
guidebook?
Page
Oh, you need to know which verse?
No.
I can tell you what verse if I just go back to those pages myself. So, you know, on page 16, if you look at verse 12.
Right.
On page 20, verse 4, pure form. Let's say, oh, hold on, not verse 4.
Primal element of feeling and sensation.
That's 20.
That's what he just said.
Oh.
Feeling and sensation, I'm sorry, on page 20, yeah, feeling and sensation. On page 23, on page 18.
Page 18, verse 6, pure form.
Okay, great, thanks, Pat.
That's okay, I know these things.
page 23, verse 9, primal form of perception. And then on page 28, the primal form of concept in verse 12, right.
And now on this page, primal form of the element of concept, or on verse 12, the primal element of consciousness, which is concept. It's in both cases.
Yeah.
Great.
It's very helpful to have you put the descriptor when you say the names. That's very helpful. Some people don't have a way to associate an aspect of consciousness as being an element of consciousness, as being an aspect of humanness as it moves away from the definition of pure spirit. And it's nice to define how that occurs in a really simple way. And awareness as space, awareness as the first one. It's like, where am I? It's the first thing you say when you're lost. Where am I? Space. Concept, yeah. Yeah, concept's my favorite one for some reason. If we're going to skip, are we skipping all the other lines in 10? Okay. If we're going to skip now into that wonderful text, which is called Ulakahar.
Well, that's what we're going to do next week.
If we're going to skip into that, I would request that people who have not read aloud the other verses of 10, because we did not read them all aloud tonight.
No.
And that seems to be something that's very helpful for people to hear the text aloud. The parts that you did not hear us read aloud tonight, please read them aloud, either to yourselves or to each other or to your loved ones, so that you get to hear them aloud. And then next week, 11 is not quite as long, and we'll be able to read the whole thing.
You will read the whole thing.
Yeah. But hearing it is really important. Hearing it is important.
And if you can't hear it, then you can read it and listen to yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it's just, this is the whole idea of working in group, when you have someone that can read to you and just be the listener and open to that.
The cats like to be read to. Plants, dishes, the lights.
So, how are we doing?
I have no complaints.
Good. Well, thank you, everybody, again, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Yes.
Take care.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks so much.